Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia, and this is a workshop episode of Small Town Podcast. This is part two of interviews with candidates for Georgia governor. As with our previous episode, I asked the candidates the same questions about issues specific to rural Georgia, and then give them a chance to address issues important in their perspective and explain why they should get your vote. The questions were provided by Robert Williams, a veteran of the news media in South Georgia and owner of the Blackshear Times. I should point out before we start that I was not able to get all 10 candidates interviewed for this series. You will not hear from Stacey Abrams. Now, I was able to make contact with her campaign, and we had tentatively scheduled interviews on a couple of occasions, but at the end, we were not able to make it work, even by telephone. Stacey Evans' campaign was not able to set up a time to meet in person, but we were able to do an interview by phone. Now, I prefer to interview in person, and of course, get the selfies with each person I interview, but I was glad to give her the opportunity to talk with you, our Small Town Podcast audience. That being said, the audio on that interview is not quite as good over the phone, and there are a couple of points in the interview where the signal was disrupted. As before, I've asked the candidates to introduce themselves.
Good morning. This is Brian Kemp, Georgia Secretary of State, and also a small business owner for over 30 years now, so it's good to be with you this morning.
My name is Mark Urbach, statesman candidate for governor of the great state of Georgia.
Hi, I'm Clay Tippins.
I'm Stacey Evans, and I'm running to be the next governor of Georgia to bring hope and opportunity to all Georgia families.
And now here they are in their own words. All right, I'm joined now by the Secretary of State, Mr. Brian Kemp, candidate for Georgia governor. Secretary Kemp, thanks for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Hey, great to be on with you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Now, in a small town, there's two very important questions people will ask when they're trying to get to know you, and that's, where are you from, and what do your folks do? So, Secretary Kemp, where are you from, and what do your folks do?
Well, I'm from God's country, Athens, Georgia. Most people around the state know where that fine town is. I've been there basically my whole life. My mom was from there. Her whole side of the family was involved in real estate. My dad was from Atlanta. He was involved in real estate, insurance, and then ended up in the convenience store business. And so had a really interesting background being raised by parents that were also involved in small business, which that's what I've been doing my whole career. I went the construction route, owned a construction company for over 20 years and have multiple other businesses that I'm still involved in. And so I really resonate, I think, and appreciate and understand what's happening in small town Georgia. Our economy's built off the back of small business owners, and I'm one of them, as they say.
Now, I want to ask you two questions, and maybe the same answer, but it may be different depending on your perspective. Why do you want to be governor, and why should people make you their governor?
Well, you know, being that small business person involved in the local Chamber of Commerce, involved in my community, raising a young family. My wife, Marty, and I now have three teenage daughters. But, you know, I started my own construction company in 1993, did that for a very long time. I went to work for some guys I was working for with when I was at Georgia, and went right to work for them literally the day after I got out. And I just became really frustrated with government, and I decided to do something about it. And I ran against an incumbent for the state senate because I was tired of government regulations, high taxes, big government policies, and wanted to bring kind of a small business person's mentality to state government. Also somebody that would represent our values and my values, which I think resonate and really are like-minded to people in rural Georgia and small rural Georgia towns, you know, fighting for families and working Georgians. And that's what drove me to run for the legislature, and that's what really still drives me and is why I want to be governor. I'm running to put Georgians first ahead of the special interest, the status quo, the politically correct, and those that are here illegally. And it seems like the more I've been involved, the more frustrated I get in some ways. I mean, we've done a lot of things in the Secretary of State's office to cut government red tape, to make it easier for people to do business with our office. We're dealing with a lot of people in rural Georgia. You know, we work with every county registrar and elections office. So I've visited almost every single elections office in the state of Georgia. We're dealing with a lot of the cities as well on elections, but we're also dealing with working Georgians that literally live in all corners and all counties and all cities in our state. When you think about people that we have to provide a professional license to, people that are filing corporations and obviously registered voters.
All right, I've got some questions specific to rural Georgia. And the first one, there is much talk about expanding broadband internet access in rural Georgia. What is your proposal for easier and better access, and how do you propose we pay for it?
Well, I think it's good for people, especially in rural cities and rural counties and rural communities across our state, to understand where I come from on this. I visited all 159 counties. I believe I'm the only candidate in the governor's race that's actually taken the time to do that. And that was not a fly-in, fly-out visit. That was a drive-down, speak to a civic club, you know, do a sit down with the paper, visit the chamber, walk through the courthouse, go to the sheriff's office. You know, I hardly ever spend the night in a hotel room when I'm traveling across the state. I'm staying with friends. You know, we're having dinner with their friends. We're going to the early morning breakfast spot like we did in Osceola, where you can really learn what's going on in rural Georgia. And that's where all the decisions are made, at the local breakfast spot. So I've brought that perspective. So my idea for rural broadband or high-speed internet in rural Georgia's, you know, that is not my only issue for rural Georgia. And that's why I was the first candidate in the race to have a complete plan to strengthen rural Georgia and to make it a new day in rural Georgia. Now, part of that plan includes running high-speed internet, opening up the ability to be able to do that over existing power lines, to do it through TV white spaces, you know, really cutting the government bureaucracy out. It does not include another government agency being in charge of that, like other people in the race have talked about getting GTA to supervise that. To me, that is a bureaucratic red tape way to do things. I want to empower the private sector to do that. That would be my first initiative. My second would be public-private partnerships. And people are like, well, we don't need government, you know, doing something that the private sector can do. And I agree, and I've never, you know, said that's what we need to do. But if the private sector is not going to do it, we cannot wait to provide high-speed internet in rural areas. I've stayed in homes where, you know, the biggest issue in that home, besides maybe rural health care, is that their children can't get on the internet to do their homework. As we discussed earlier, they're worried about going over their data plan because their kids are, you know, having to use cell service to get to the internet.
So to piggyback off of that, with the notion that internet access allows much work to now be done from anywhere, do you see opportunities to move more of the state's jobs further out away from metro areas and into parts of rural Georgia? And feel free to share some examples.
Yeah, absolutely we do. And I think it's not, you know, the high-speed internet is not just about education. It's not just about economic development. It's both of those things, but it's also about rural health care. It's about opportunity. You know, one of the 4 points of my conservative 4-point plan, which is, you know, make Georgia number one for small business, fundamentally reform how state government spends, taxes, and operates, and then making sure that we're moving all of our state forward with a specific plan to strengthen rural Georgia and then putting Georgians first. But that third point about strengthening rural Georgia is really, you know, what drives all of this. We've got to have our whole state growing. It's not healthy to just be growing in Atlanta, Augusta, Savannah, you know, Macon, and Columbus. We've got to be having opportunities. I mean, as you know, as a mayor, our small cities, the population's decreasing. We're aging out. You know, on a visit to Colquitt, Georgia, in Miller County, met with a guy that runs the peanut buying point there. And he told me this story about he hired this kid that just graduated from Valdosta State and he said, you know, the thing about it is, I don't even know what I'm going to have him do yet. And I said, really? He goes, yeah. But he said, I couldn't afford to let him leave because if he did, he would never be back. And he said, that's a big problem that we have in Colquitt, Georgia. And I know that's going on all over. So that's the reason we really focused the whole plan to strengthen rural Georgia. You know, part of our plan is to take the Georgia Grown program that Agriculture Commissioner Gary Black's done a great job of promoting and really innovating to put Georgia Grown products on the map. You know, I want to take that internationally to increase our exports that will help our rural communities. I have proposed an economic development strike team under a Kemp administration in the Department of Economic Development that will work with rural communities, counties, cities, you know, consortiums of groups, economic development authorities, the private sector, to identify assets and identify communities that want to work together to move the needle and do projects of significance in rural Georgia. And a couple of good examples is in Jefferson County, Louisville, Georgia. I did a visit down there to Battle Lumber Company, the largest contiguous sawmill footprint in the United States of America, which is really interesting. You never would think that. Amazing facility. And when we got done with our visit there, this was one of the county visits I was doing. They asked me, said, you got 15 more minutes. We just want to show you something. And I said, sure. So we drove out to the site right outside town. There was an old sewing plant, you know, typical rectangle, long building, one-story brick, flat roof. And then right next to it was a wastewater treatment plant that was completely empty. It looked like a drained swimming pool. Well, being in the construction business, you know, when we pulled up, I looked at that concrete pond and I thought, man, this is a really good asset right here for somebody. And I told the guy that, and he goes, exactly. We're trying to market this to somebody that could use the facility. They wouldn't have to pay for it to put it in. The county would get revenue off of it, or the city. I can't remember which owned it. Anyway, a couple months later, they got Crider Poultry to go in with a chicken processing plant. They started using the wastewater treatment plant, and they still have capacity, so now they, you know, have another site available. But that created, I think it was about 90 jobs in Jefferson County, which is huge for them. I mean, that's as good as getting 1,000 jobs at, you know, the industrial park where, you know, Baxter went and where Facebook's going with their new data center. And I understand that. You know, that means just as much to them down there as, 1,000 jobs in Atlanta. And so that's a good example of if we find an asset, it will be a priority under the Kemp administration to work with them to market that. We also, you know, we take a lot of economic development trade missions to, you know, China, and we go to India, and we go to Canada, and we go to South America. And I'm certainly supportive of that, and we'll continue to do that. But we also need to be going to California and Maryland, states that are literally regulating and overtaxing their ag producers and agribusiness people and other manufacturers out of their state. Lack of water is also driving folks out of their state. We need to be marketing those people to move to Georgia. I mean, we got plenty of land, we got plenty of water, we got good-hearted and hard-working Georgians in our rural communities, and we need to bring facilities that will value add to our agricultural products. So we're not just taking those raw products to the market, but we can, you know, do something with them, value add them, and increase our exports, or increase our sales in our production in rural Georgia. You know, the world's food supply is going to double in the, I think it's the next 20 years or next 50 years. But anyway, the point is there's only so much land in the world that can grow agricultural products. And in certain places like Canada, where they grow a lot of ag products, they can only do it a certain time of the year because of the weather. So we're an ideal place to be part of the breadbasket, literally, of the world. And this is something that Dean Scott Angle talked many times about, the former dean at the UGA College of Agriculture, about that opportunity. And a lot of that exists in rural Georgia. And I will be a governor that will be focused on that to bring not only, you know, good paying jobs, but it's the investment that you need. You know, you need that tax base. And that really leads to rural health care, which is also part of our plan. The model for rural health care, expanding Medicaid, throwing more government money at it, that's never going to work if populations continue to decrease and the tax values continue to go down in those communities. You're just never going to be able to support a hospital. So we've got to focus on the economic development side to slow down the population decrease, to slowly turn that around and do infrastructure projects that will build that tax base up to give Georgians in those areas that opportunity. And I would just end that long answer with this, that, you know, I've said if young people want to leave for better opportunities to do something cool, like go to New York or go to D.C. or move to Atlanta to get experience, you know, I certainly support that. But they shouldn't have to. You know, they shouldn't have to move out of their local community because they don't have opportunity, and that will be my goal as governor.
You mentioned healthcare, so you've already given me a little segue here. That's the next topic. Hospital care is not available nearby in many areas of rural Georgia, and smaller hospitals have been closing throughout the state. Attracting primary care physicians is growing more and more difficult. In addition, many rural Georgians have no nearby Level 1 trauma center medical facility, often condemning them to a more likely death from violent accidents, strokes, heart attacks, and the like. Do you have a solution to expand access to such care for rural residents? And again, how would that be paid for?
Well, I think it's got to be a priority of state government. I mean, to me, the way we pay for the priorities that we have in state government, that is literally a priority of my conservative four-point plan. That's part of that fundamentally reform the way state government spends, taxes, and operates. You know, I have advocated for doing a spending cap that's tied to population and inflation so we can continue to grow as a state to provide the resources we need as our state continues to grow. But we don't overgrow in good times like we're in now. Budget conservatively, and then we properly are able to fund the things that we need to, like education, like healthcare, public safety, transportation, those core things that government should be doing. And if we do that, then we can better fund, you know, the things that we need to fund in state government, and healthcare is certainly one of those. I think there's some ways that we can untie the special interest at the Capitol that are tying up private sector solutions to part of the Medicaid program that can reduce cost, that will help, you know, give us more money to increase provider updates. You know, the problem is you have doctors now that won't participate because the rates are so low. So even if you were to expand it and have more people coming in the system, you don't have anybody to treat them. I mean, that is just an insufficient model to be able to do that. So part of our rural plan, or my rural plan for healthcare, number one, it starts with telemedicine. That goes back to getting high-speed internet everywhere where we can start to provide access through telemedicine. I talked to some guys literally this week. Can't really say a whole lot about that, but they have some really interesting models to be able to provide that access that would, you know, help business people, because it's not just access for individuals, but it's also just businesses being able to provide that health care. We need to be focused on getting people in the workforce so they're on private sector insurance versus being on Medicaid. As part of our plan, we do support and expand incentives for medical providers in Georgia. I mean, that's certainly a problem, is getting people to go there. So I'm willing to commit to doing that. We've also got to work on transportation issues. You know, there's issues with people in rural Georgia having the ability or having viable transportation to be able to not only get to health care alternatives, but also to get to a place of employment. So part of our plan has tax incentives for companies to be able to buy vehicles so they can get people to work. They can get them to work. They can get them on private sector health care. What we've got to do also is open that market up to the private sector. And this is, you know, this is part of a federal issue dealing with the whole Obamacare thing. But, you know, we've seen in Georgia that there's just no choices anymore. You really have one choice in many communities of who your health care provider is going to be. We've got to find a way to get the private sector more engaged, to create competition, to lower cost. And that will be my goal as governor.
Switching gears a little bit, regional TSPOS referendums are seen as one way that smaller rural communities can recover some of their sales tax dollars that flow into regional trade centers. It is questionable, however, if this approach can work, because TSPOS have only been approved in three regions in our state, although others are coming up for a referendum. Do you see another way for rural communities to regain more of their tax dollar outflow?
Well, I certainly support the idea of the regional T-Splosh and local communities taking it in their own hands, if they would like to move the needle on transportation. You know, I actually voted against the T-Splosh when it was up back whenever that was, 2012, I think it was the first time, because I felt like our project list had a lot of things on it that didn't have anything to do with relieving congestion or creating more economic opportunities. It was, you know, things like bike lanes and sidewalks, which I'm not necessarily opposed to, but I'm just thinking if we're going to increase taxes, you know, we need to do something to get some bang for that buck. There were road projects in there that I felt like just weren't going to move the needle on that. But I definitely, you know, would consider voting for something like that if the project list was good. And in many communities, they've done that, and they're seeing good results from that over in the whole Augusta, Columbia County area. I think people have been very pleased with that in other parts of the state, so I'm supportive of that. But this is really where my plan for governor to do the spending cap, where we're budgeting conservatively, where we're properly funding the things that we need to do, and certainly transportation is one of those. We need to continue to look for innovation as well to mitigate congestion in the metro area. But we've also got to do projects that have a good return on investment and that, you know, move the needle. So, you know, one of the things that I've been supporting and I talked about in the Transportation Alliance Forum is, you know, we need to four lane from Macon over to LaGrange and then four lane 27 all the way up through Northwest Georgia and Chattanooga to get truck traffic off of 75 that's going into the metro area, to take the truck traffic coming out of the port so we can divert it around the metro area. But that also, you know, that's called the import-export highway because it's going to open up that part of rural Georgia for economic opportunity. So you're getting more bang for your buck. That is the best ROI project in DOT's long-range plan. So we've got to do things like that. And as governor, I will also not be someone that will make rural Georgians pay for congestion mitigation in the metro area. I support the metro area doing regional transportation splice to move the needle. I support looking at all alternatives. But we also got to ask the question, when you propose those projects, you know, who's going to pay for it? I mean, how much is it going to cost and who's going to pay for it? Because I've said many times, there's people in other parts of the state that they have their own transportation initiatives that they want to do in rural communities, like open up four-lane highways so they can have better logistics, which provide economic opportunities. They can get their crops and their goods to the market quicker and cheaper. Also, we have a whole plan on our rural plan and our transportation plan dealing with rail to really continue to look to support private sector rail that we have, to also continue to focus on inland ports, especially in rural areas, that will open up different markets and get transportation logistics being better. So that's something that we'll also be working on.
Final question. No matter what the state of Georgia proposes, the majority of rural Georgia, they're going to be farther away than that, quote, magic hour away from the Atlanta airport that so many consider to be crucial to attracting development. What steps can you propose to help overcome that obstacle in transportation and logistics?
Well, I know the governor in the budget this year put some additional funding in to help rural airports. I certainly support that. I do think that will help open up economic development opportunities and logistics in rural parts of our state. I also will be open to other projects that will come up. This is really where I think our strike teams in the Department of Economic Development can have some value. I know when I was in Colquitt County in Moultrie not too long ago, they're pitching a project down there to repave Spence Field, which is where they have the Ag Expo. I've been there many times. It's a great facility, a perfect place to put some infrastructure in where they could actually market that to a regional or a international transportation company like a UPS, FedEx, or a smaller carrier to try to, you know, move packages out of that facility coming in and going out that would, you know, take some of that from continuously going into Atlanta. You know, it would open up quicker access to markets in South Georgia, Alabama, Florida, and South Carolina. So to me, those kind of projects make a lot of sense. So that's something I'm definitely open to supporting. But I also think we need to continue to look at innovation. I mean, there's some really neat things going on when you think about autonomous vehicles, autonomous trucks, the Hyperloop, which works like your tube you send through the bank drive-through. You know, those things are coming. I know people doubt that, but they're absolutely coming. They're testing autonomous vehicles now. That there will be some ups and downs as that happens, but you know, it's just going to be something that would be really interesting to have if you had trucks driving at night when nobody else is, with no limits on the hours that they can drive. You know, that really will lower transportation costs. I mean, one of the big things in the industry now is the regulations that are on truckers, and I understand that from a safety standpoint. So I think we have to continue to look to the future. We can't just continue to do things the way we always have in this really economy now that changes almost yearly.
I just want to give you the opportunity to address any other rural issues that are part of your platform, how you would do things for rural Georgia.
Well, I think it's just important for me or for people to know about me. It's not just our rural plan. It's not how much I've been to rural Georgia, visited rural communities. It's really that I understand that, because being in business for 30 years, you know, I was involved up until recently in a manufacturing facility that was in Turner County, one of the poorest counties in the state. And I know how much that business meant to that community. Our stone business that we still have is one of that company's largest customers. So I understand how that affects that community and how important even a, you know, a small business that employs, you know, 50 to 75 people can impact that business. In the Secretary of State's office, you know, we've had an office in Tifton for many years that serves all of South Georgia. And Tifton, I know, is in South Georgia, but sometimes you wonder if it's actually a rural community anymore. Tift County certainly has rural parts of it, but because of the access to 75 and the great things they've done there, it's not really a small community anymore. But not far from Tifton, there are very small communities, and our office serves that. And we know how valuable that is to have good government services in rural Georgia. So I would urge people to go to kempforgovernor.com and to look at our plan to strengthen rural Georgia and look at our other plans to really promote small business, make Georgia number one for small business, to fundamentally reform state government and to put Georgians first. But it's important for them to know that I understand the issues in rural Georgia and rural cities. I don't want to have people think I know everything, because I don't. But my point is, I've been accessible over the years. I have worked with people in these local communities, and I will certainly do that as governor, which is one reason that we've proposed our track and deport plan to create a criminal alien, illegal alien database to take on drug cartels, gangs, and this really violent crime that's going on. And that's a big issue in rural Georgia. You know, I've been talking to state law enforcement, GBI, and federal prosecutors, and they've told me, look, these drug dealers and cartels, they don't want to go to places like Atlanta and Savannah because they have a lot of law enforcement. They have drug task forces. But in rural communities, rural cities, you know, you don't have the experience there. You don't have the numbers. So they are making that a distribution hub for the rest of the country. One of these people told me that Georgia's becoming the Miamis of the 80s, and that we are a distribution hub for the Mexican drug cartel. And that's leading to, you know, really an opioid epidemic, a substance abuse epidemic that is putting a lot of strain on the workforce in rural Georgia. So I'll be a governor that's going to go after that to protect our families and to make sure that we do maintain the values that we've always had in rural parts of our state.
And I'll just give you a chance now to address the audience directly and appeal to them for their vote to make you the next governor of Georgia.
Well, as I said earlier, I'm Brian Kemp. I'm a small business owner for 30 years now. I'm a father. I got a great wife, three teenage daughters. Also have served as Secretary of State and have legislative experience. I'm the only person in the governor's race that has served in the legislature, has executive branch experience running a large agency, 250 people, having many duties that we have to perform literally 7 days a week, and been in the private sector, just a hard-working Georgian, for over 30 years now, and that includes today. I'm still making payroll. I'm still dealing with, you know, filing my corporate tax returns last week and all the things that hard-working Georgians are. And that is the mentality that I will bring as your governor. I will put you first ahead of the special interests, the status quo, the politically correct. I'd like to ask for your vote and your support in my campaign for governor. The primary is May the 22nd, which is fast approaching, and you can get more information at kempforgovernor.com.
Secretary Kemp, thank you so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Been an honor. Thanks so much.
All right, I'm now joined by Mark Urbach, candidate for Georgia governor. Mr. Urbach, thanks for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Well, thank you, Matt. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I want to start with two questions you get asked. If you go into a small town, people want to size you up, figure out who you are, and that is, where are you from and what do your folks do? So, Mr. Urbach, where are you from and what do your folks do?
I've been here in Atlanta for 18 years, and originally from Orlando, Florida. Before that, 3 years on the Army base in Fort Rucker, Alabama. My dad is a retired orthopedic surgeon, still living in Orlando, Florida. My mom passed away 5 years ago.
All right, and I want to ask two questions that may be answered the same way, but it's up to you. Why do you want to be governor of Georgia, and why should people elect you to be the governor of Georgia?
Good question. I want to be governor of Georgia because I know we must put in a leader in the people's mansion. Also, a God-fearing, God-loving individual like myself, Exodus 18:21. We must put in a leader into the people's mansion to fix all the problems and continue making Georgia number one in all the areas. And the other question is, why should the people put their trust in me? There is a clear difference between statesman Mark Urbach and the other candidates, career politicians, and fake lying conservatives. It's interesting that for about 25 years, people in the state, Republicans, have been putting in conservatives. But look where it's gotten us. Conservatives, they are conservative with our money as they give it to their friends in the higher echelons of education and other entities. This system we have, I call them the oligarchs. This government is out of control in terms of financial corruption, the likes I've never seen before. So I am determined by myself and with Team Urbach's legal department and the thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands and millions of good Georgians to put in leadership into your governor's mansion, and we will succeed beyond all expectations.
All right, I want to ask some questions specific to rural Georgia, and I'm going to start with internet. There is much talk about expanding broadband internet access in rural Georgia. What is your proposal for easier and better access, and how do you propose to pay for it?
Good question. Rural areas of Georgia must be treated with the same opportunities as citizens in the cities. And it's unacceptable that citizens and students have internet at schools, at fast food restaurants, but not at home. So Governor Urbach's plan to fix this problem is to greatly cut regulations for small businesses to thrive and for small businesses in coordination with state and federal grants to get the internet service into all rural areas of Georgia. Okay, because that's how we solve things, cooperating with the state and federal and small businesses and the corporations that already provide internet service, working together for all rural Georgians.
And to piggyback off of that, with the notion that internet access allows much work to now be done from anywhere, do you see opportunities to move more of the state's jobs further out away from metro areas into more parts of rural Georgia? And feel free to use examples.
Yeah, well, people live where they want to live. They're going to move where they want to move, whether they're young, middle age, or retired. It's kind of common sense where people move. My determination, one of my platforms is Hotel, Hotel, Lima, Romeo. Health, happiness, love, and respect. Okay, and people here in Georgia will move to the rural areas very, very fast when the internet service is provided. And as your governor, we are determined to provide that internet service for all Georgians, but especially the rural areas, so people can move to the rural areas and have the same qualities of life in terms of high tech and internet capability for themselves, their families, their homes, and more importantly, their businesses will be just as equally treated with the same opportunities of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness as people living in the major cities.
All right, I want to shift now to healthcare. Two-part question. Hospital care is not available in many areas in rural Georgia, and smaller hospitals have been closing throughout the state. Attracting primary care physicians is growing more and more difficult. In addition, many rural Georgians have no nearby level one trauma center medical facility, sometimes condemning them to a more likely death from violent accidents, strokes, heart attacks, and the like. Do you have a solution to expand access to such care for rural residents? And again, how would it be paid for?
It's a great question. Unfortunately, the Affordable Care Act, which most people call Obamacare, has ruined the hospitals, the rural hospitals in Georgia. So here's the solution. We are building three types of entities all over South Georgia in the rural areas and in the northern areas. Three types. Brick-and-mortar trade-skill facilities, brick-and-mortar health facilities, and brick-and-mortar high-tech computer facilities. Every citizen should treat their body like some Georgians treat their cars, like roughly every 5,000 miles, they get a tune-up and oil change. I want every citizen to have a quick access in terms of location in the rural areas. They get their bodies fully checked out, all the levels, blood pressure, you know what I'm saying, Matt? So the way to fix it is we build, okay? And where's the money going to come from? The General Assembly. They have billions and billions and billions of our dollars that they've sucked up through property taxes that they give their friends in higher education, okay? The financial corruption is out of control. So my legal team and myself, we're going to use the grand jury to drain this swamp and get the monies allocated properly for all Georgians, especially in the rural areas, to build these healthcare facilities so all rural Georgians can have the same quality of healthcare and life as people in the inner city. So we're building. Does that make sense? It's common sense. Okay.
Shifting gears a little bit, regional TSPOS referendums are seen as one way that smaller rural areas can recover some of their sales tax dollars that flow into regional trade centers. It is questionable, however, if this approach can work because TSPOS haven't been approved in many regions, although some others are coming up on future referendums. Do you see another way for small rural areas to regain more of their tax dollar outflow?
Yeah, the small rural areas, it's unfortunate that they don't have the large industries, okay, creating humongous amounts of wealth. Okay, the way to fix that is to provide incentives for businesses to thrive in the rural areas. Okay, incentives for people that want to get out of the large cities where people are very, very tight in terms of how close they are to their neighbors and traffic, and provide incentives for them to move to the rural areas. When businessmen and businesswomen start their small businesses in the rural areas, you'll have a larger tax base. Okay, and with cleaning the government, the billions and billions of dollars that are misappropriated, the oligarchs given to their friends, rural areas will thrive. Also, I have a huge, massive program to build what I call common sense Georgia-style OK Corrals. I want to build towns in Georgia rural areas and replicate like the OK Corral towns. They'll be just like the Old West. But inside every building will be the modern amenities with the internet connections and everything. So these will work. Our tourism will flourish. Our jobs will flourish. Our tax base will greatly increase in the rural areas. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
Final question. No matter what the state of Georgia proposes, the majority of South Georgia and other rural areas are going to be farther away than the, quote, magic hour away from the Atlanta airport that so many consider to be crucial to attracting development. What steps can you propose to help overcome that obstacle in logistics and transportation?
Yeah, well, that's transportation with the Atlanta airport is very crucial, but we must provide a massive infrastructure project for transportation in Georgia. The 4.5 million Metro Atlantans are crawling right now. Matt, can you imagine how bad the traffic's going to be in 5 to 10 years? It's going to double worse. So the solution to that is not more roads inside the 285 perimeter. It's the high-speed silver bullet monorail system. I have it here in Marietta. It's at www.otg-inc.com. It's a silver bullet, high-speed monorail, 220-mile-per-hour transit system. Will link all the cities of Georgia and into the rural areas. And you can imagine how much better this will be than MARTA. The politicians and fake conservatives in the Gold Dome are trying right now with their bills to put MARTA into 159 special districts. That's a code word for 159 counties. That means these good old boys and girls, the oligarchs, are trying to push a failed financial system called MARTA into the entire state. And I blocked it at the Cobb County Commission about 4 weeks ago, where I was able to speak for 3 minutes as a citizen, okay? And I presented the truth that the grand jury has historically been the body, the governing body, that decides all transportation issues, roads, byways, bridges, and modern-day MARTA-type systems. So we must plan for the future for us, our children, and their families, okay? And the high-speed bullet train, the monorail system, is the way to go. Pertaining to the airport, we must provide incentives in the rural areas for large airports to thrive. We're going to get approximately 4 to 5 million more people coming to Georgia. Approximately 500,000 are going to move within the metro area inside the 285 circle. Well, they don't have to go inside the circle. We, as your governor, Mark Urbeck, will provide every incentive that we can to provide the quality of life for all rural Georgians. And that means providing incentives for a massive airport in the South Georgia below the Columbus-Macon-Augusta Fall line.
All right, we've covered a lot of topics, but I want to give you the opportunity to address any rural issues that we haven't already covered.
All right, well, thank you. You know, I love Georgia. Georgians are the best citizens in the nation, and Georgia is the best state in the nation. I've been here for 18 years. Okay, and I've lived in Florida, New Jersey, California. I was in Texas for 9 years as a small businessman. To say that I love Georgians, that's an understatement. We are incredible citizens. And rural Georgians, when I get out of 285 metro area, it's instantly love and respect and happiness and healthy. You know, rural Georgians have like a saying. It's like, we're good old boys and good old girls. And what we need to do for rural Georgians is, again, my oath to God, 10 million Georgians and our future children, which is our posterity, and two constitutions will always be upheld. That means people's quality of life, especially rural Georgians that have been denied opportunities, educational opportunities, and health opportunities, and infrastructure, internet opportunities, those citizens in rural Georgia will be treated equally as all citizens of Georgia. That means, as governor, you will see a complete increase in health and happiness and sale in jobs and opportunities for rural Georgians to succeed. I don't want you to think that I'm going to change rural Georgia. No way. No, we're going to make life better for rural Georgians, and the rural Georgians will decide what they want. I am not going to come down with a heavy hand and force anything on rural Georgia. If the rural Georgians in Waycross, Brantley, Ware County, or any county south of the Macon, Columbus, Augusta Fall line, they will decide the quality of life that they want. The people are the first branch of government. They need to tell the governor's office and tell the representatives in the Gold Dome what they want, and the representatives are supposed to represent the people. Okay, not represent their corporate interests or their special interests or lobbies. Folks of Georgia, rural Georgians, God bless you and your families. You guys are righteous down there. I've been down to Waycross and Brantley County and Ware County 2 times. You tell the representatives what you want. You submit your bills. You tell them to represent you. We, the people of Georgia, the first branch. And if they don't do it, tell them to pack their bags and go home. Because this is the type of leadership you're going to get from Governor Urbach. I love you so much. And we will succeed beyond all expectations. And Matt, God bless you. And thank you for being here.
All right. Thank you. If you want to address directly to the audience as to why they should vote for Mark Urbach for governor of Georgia.
Okay, well, thank you. You should vote for Governor Mark Urbach because I am a statesman whose oath to God, you, our future children, and two constitutions will be upheld. We will succeed because finally, after over 25 years of people putting in conservatives, and look where it's gotten us, one of the most corrupt governments in America, and this is from people inside, whether they're state reps now, they tell me this, or lobbyists, we will continue to make Georgia number one for business. Georgia beef is what's for dinner. We're going to provide the infrastructure, the transportation. We will take control of our schools. Common Core is no more. There's a clear choice for your next governor. Okay, a clear choice. Statesman Urbach versus these career corrupt politicians and fake conservatives. And let's get it right, folks. We are Georgians, we are Georgia, and we will succeed. If you'd like to help this great cause for freedom, I have only accepted 14 checks the past 9 months. I don't like asking for money. I have put my life, fortune, and sacred honor on the line for this state and nation the past 5 years, more than anyone except the men and women in the military. Okay, and we have 3.5 million veterans in Georgia, and they come first before illegal aliens, refugees, and new immigrants. We are going to protect and financially secure all our veterans. Okay, my website, if you'd like to make a donation to this great cause for freedom and justice, www.markurbach.com. And my book is Believe, Do We Need a Third Great Awakening? And thousands of citizens that we've talked to the past 9 months, they all say, yes, we do need a third great awakening. And then they love my book and they're slowly buying my book because we have to get common sense back in Georgia to our boys and girls in the schools. They need to be reading more, writing more, learning more, speaking more, and Believe, Do We Need a Third Great Awakening has been read by about 400 Americans, 5 members of Congress, and they all say it's one of the best books they've ever read. And I believe in Georgians. Team Urbach believes in Georgians. And if you want to make a $60 donation or more, you will get a signed copy of my book for free. I'll put it in the mail for you. It'll be my honor to meet with you. It's my honor to serve you as your next governor. And if you believe in me the way I believe in you, we will succeed. So, Matt, again, thank you so much for driving up here. It's a pleasure meeting you.
All right, Mr. Mark Urbach, thank you so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Thank you so much, Matt.
Now, as you might have guessed, I love small towns and the laid-back lifestyle they offer. But you know who else loves small-town living? The ladies at the Southern Mercantile. The Southern Mercantile is an online store promoting Southern style and Southern traditions. Their blog highlights small-town living at its best with stories of the joys and sometimes the struggles of living in a community where everybody knows everybody. Whether you live in a small town or a big city, you can enjoy being a part of the Southern Mercantile online community. Check out their website at southernmercantile.com to shop, to read the blog, or to get recipes. See the market schedule to see when the Southern Merc girls might be at a market near you anywhere in the southeastern United States. Do me a favor and show them some love for supporting this podcast. Follow them on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, or Snapchat. The Southern Mercantile. All right, I'm joined now by Lieutenant Commander Clay Tippins, candidate for governor. I say that because as a senior chief in the Navy, I want to be respectful of my officers. Lieutenant Commander Tippins, thanks for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Thanks. It's good to be on.
Now,
but I was often guilty of letting my guys call me by my first name, so let's just get rid of the Lieutenant Commander stuff, and Clay will work just fine.
All right, Clay. Thanks for joining us. Now, in a small town, people want to ask two main questions to try to get to know you, try to feel you out a little bit. Where are you from and what your folks do? So, Clay Tippins, where are you from and what do your folks do?
Most of my growing up was in Gwinnett County. We lived out off a scenic highway between Lawrenceville and Snellville when it was still scenic. A lot more stuff going on there now than there was in the 70s or early 80s when we lived out that way. My wife, Lori, is from Carrollton, and we met in 1996 and got married in 1997. So, in a couple of days, we're going to celebrate our 21st wedding anniversary. My dad worked for the telephone company for almost 30 years. His father worked for the telephone company for 42 years. My mom, you know, she spent a lot of my youth raising us, and then she ended up getting into real estate, and she lives up in Chattooga County now, up in Cloudland, Georgia, and she does real estate work up there. So that's me in a nutshell.
All right, so I want to start by asking you two questions that may be answered kind of the same way. Depends on how you think of it. But why do you want to be the governor, and why should people make you their governor?
I've become convicted that there's a set of challenges and opportunities sitting in front of Georgia right now that we need a different skill set. I'm running against a bunch of folks. Some of them are fine folks. They've got something like 60 years of combined political experience, and that's not my background. I ran a large technology business. I was a decorated Navy SEAL, and I've never run before, so I'm bringing a different set of ideas and a different approach. And I'll tell you what those challenges are and why I think my background's the right one. We're the number one, Metro Atlanta's the number one place in America for sex trafficking. It's a $300 million a year business. And if you look at where that thing ties into, it ties in your heroin gangs, it ties in your MS-13 gangs. And as a SEAL, I've been involved in identifying, mapping out, targeting, and taking down networks of terrorists. That's a very unique skill set, and it happens to be the skill set and the urgency and the ruthlessness that you need to bring to those gang-related problems. That's not an outcome that's going to happen with the other opponents. That's an outcome I believe I can bring. Third-grade reading is one of the best ways to predict how many prison beds we're going to be paying for in 15 years, and two-thirds of the third-graders in Georgia don't read at a third-grade level. And I think that, you know, we're going to need not just to make a stronger investment that's got to be in all chips the center of the table. We've got to have a 21st century education system that takes into a fact that 42% of kids in Georgia now born out of wedlock. That's a real number, 42%. It's actually surging right now to 45%. So we've got to rethink education with an emphasis on early education. You know, there's some infrastructure investments that are required, like the Savannah Port, some roads. And I want those things to be done with less taxes, not more taxes. Which brings you to how do you pay for those things? I think baby boomers retiring at a rate they never have. That's an opportunity to reinvent government, shrink government, reprioritize government. I think we can use analytics to squeeze out waste, fraud, and abuse in our entitlement system where 78% of the money is. And I think also, you know, make government run better. Those are outcomes you get with someone that's been a successful business person and a Navy SEAL that you don't get with someone that spent their career in politics. And I felt like that was needed in this race. You know, there was a moment where I feel like I was truly called to do this, and I kind of had two things pop into my head at the same time. In Genesis, Joseph was called before Pharaoh. He was asked to interpret a dream about the future. And he said there'd be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. And his advice was, let's make warehouses. Let's prepare for the future now. And they became the lighthouse for the entire world that has existed at that point. The other way that story could have ended was I went to the Consumer Electronics Show in 2013, and I took a picture of myself in front of Kodak's booth. They had the largest, most expensive booth at the entire show that year, and they declared bankruptcy that week. And it was a reminder of what happens when you don't reinvent and reinvest. And I think that with the great financial position Governor Deal has left us in, and with these massive advancements in technology and medicine that we've seen, we have this window to create a 21st century Georgia where we have the same level of prosperity and security that we've had. But if we don't, I don't think that we will. And if you're at a moment like that, you want an unconventional approach. You want a whatever it takes approach. And that's what I bring. None of the other people do because I've got a unique background. And that's why I jumped in this race, is I felt like there was a different leadership model necessary for governor at this time. I felt called to bring that in the race.
All right. Want to ask you some questions regarding small towns, and really we could say rural Georgia. The first one, there's much talk about expanding broadband internet access in rural Georgia. What is your proposal for easier and better access, and how would you propose to pay for it?
So a few things. First of all, let me give you a little background to your audience, just so you can kind of put in context where my answer is coming from. I've never run for office before. As you mentioned, I was a Navy SEAL officer, but between my first and second tour in the Navy, I was in the technology business for about 15 years, and I ran a large technology business, and a lot, probably half of the business, $200 million or so a year in revenue, was for telecommunications companies, and then another chunk of it was for high-tech companies like Cisco that make the literal gear that would be part of rolling out a more expansive and intelligent rural broadband network. So I come at this, you know, having worked with some of these very technologies, some of the very companies that might be part of this. I've sought counsel from many people, Rural Telephone Cooperative of America, former executives from there, from some of the technology companies who really understand what I'm talking about, because a big thing for me is, and don't run your mouth about stuff you don't know. If you don't know, just say it. Here's what I think are the key in parts. Number one, the focus needs to be on unserved areas. If you focus on underserved areas first, which there are a lot of, then you can end up with a situation where you don't get it to the folks that need it the most. And you can end up with a situation where you create perverse incentives where telephone companies or cable companies use the tax incentives or whatever to go ahead and do what they were planning on doing anyway, but they do it on the taxpayer's dime. That's not what we want. We don't want a corporate welfare, corporate giveaway program that helps big companies. We want for any monies, whether they're tax incentives, et cetera, to go to really dollar for dollar, driving increasing access in unserved areas. I think that there's a way to maximize return on investment for the taxpayer. There's a lot of technologies that are really coming online now where you can basically create a Wi-Fi canopy with high speeds over a broader set of areas. And if you optimize that based on small town, you know, blocks, you know, basically run trunk lines out of the center of town to where you pull in the most people, there's really a great way we could do this, and at a very good deal for the taxpayer, really, really help some of the unserved areas. We actually have a farm in Juliet, Georgia, which is a tiny town, you know, 20 minutes north of Macon. This is one of those things I personally can empathize with. We have satellite for our internet coverage, and I feel like sometimes I'm drinking through a straw. You know, it's almost like having a solo cup up to the ceiling with a piece of yarn on it trying to get higher speeds. So I understand that it's very, very hard to telecommute, you know, to do work from a rural area if you don't have this sort of coverage and any sort of space to upload and download documents or do video conference calls. And, you know, we chose to invest in a farm outside of Atlanta because we want to get out of Atlanta every chance we can. So I understand what having that pace of life and that groundedness and just what that's about. And families that have raised there, they don't want to face a situation where their kids feel like they got to go to Charleston or Charlotte or Atlanta or Birmingham to get work. And if we're ever going to have a reality where people can basically have the sort of economic opportunities that you can enjoy in Atlanta, but stay in the town you grew up in, we're going to have better broadband coverage. So, and I mean, it's not just for work. If you look at telemedicine, you know, we have an increased ability like never before to tap into some of the knowledge and expertise that exists at a Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, for example, or hospitals in Savannah. But if you're in a Juliet, you know, and you start having a heart attack, you're sitting there making a decision about what's the fastest hospital I can get to and is that close enough and they have the sort of treatments I need. And so it's very important also for health that we invest in this. And the last piece I'd tell you is, you know, it affects education. You think about it, it's a very simple question. In this day and age, where do most of the knowledge and the assets in the world exist? Is it inside the four walls of a classroom or outside the four walls of a classroom? And of course, it's outside. But that doesn't do a kid in South Georgia a bit of good if he can't access all those things, and that requires high-speed internet coverage. So there's a lot of reasons this has got to be a focus priority investment for us. And again, as a guy that has been in that business, I think I can do that to make sure it focuses on unserved areas, it's not the best deal for the taxpayer, and doesn't become a corporate giveaway program in a sensible public-private partnership model.
That was some great segues into the next questions. The next one, piggybacking off of that, is with the notion that internet access allows much work to be done now from anywhere, do you see opportunities to move more of the state's jobs further out from metro areas into the more rural parts of Georgia? And feel free to use examples if you have some.
I absolutely do. I'll give you a for example in our business. You know, what we found is that, and I won't name the universities I'm dinging on, but there's certain universities that we targeted. And when we hired kids from there, you know, it was a bigger, better deal. Their objective was to work for us a year and then go work for Google or Facebook or whatever. And after a while, we're like, this makes no sense. We're basically a training ground for some other company that gets the value out of it. And we shifted our recruiting efforts. For example, we focused heavily on recruiting out of Georgia Southern. Some of the best folks that work for me from Georgia Southern, what I found is there's an inherent loyalty there. And, you know, so I've seen firsthand that there is a ton of talent that exists outside of Atlanta. The second thing that I would tell you is, some cases, you can get folks to not only stay with you longer, but bring more energy to work because they're not sitting there, you know, getting in the car to do a two-hour commute. And I can tell you, I mean, you think about Atlanta as being a place where, you know, people go for work. I've got a ton of employees we had that drive 2 hours to work and they're somewhere in the metro Atlanta area and they're sick of it. And they basically see all these apartments going up and they're like, where in the world, how do people can get to work? Because there's not roads being built like there is apartments. And so I saw firsthand, there's a lot of people that are seeking a different quality of life. You know, one of my and Lori's best friends, they moved to Madison, Georgia. And so I think there's a real opportunity here. Like I said, I think a lot of that comes down to enabling it. I think another opportunity that exists is, I think there's two ways we could attack this, and the governor can play a big role. I think, first of all, you're going to see a lot of technology-centric jobs coming back on shore. You know, I led on that at the company that I was at. And what I think the opportunity that exists there is basically bringing back some of those jobs from overseas to small towns, assuming they have the technology infrastructure they need. And I think that as someone that's worked in a technology business, I can play a real leadership role in that. I've spearheaded some of those efforts in the past. The other opportunity I think exists is creating an Amazon for rural Georgia, if you will. I'll give you a for example. With the Trump tax cut, state taxes aren't deductible above a certain limit. So if you're someone that works in a California, an Oregon, a Washington, or a New York, you all of a sudden took a 10 to 13% wealth cut overnight. Well, there's a lot of timber mills, for example, in eastern Washington or eastern Oregon or upstate New York or northeastern California. And I think that if a governor of Georgia over the next few years took advantage of that dislocation, that turmoil caused by the Trump tax cuts, and went and proactively recruited some of these companies from these higher tax locations to Georgia, then you're not just talking about technology companies near Georgia Tech in Atlanta. You're talking about, for example, a timber mill that could employ, you know, 75, 100, 125 people in a South Georgia town. And then as a secondary effect where it improves the quality of the markets available to our forestry sector. So I think there's some real things that the governor of Georgia can do that I look forward to having the opportunity to lean in on.
I want to switch now to healthcare. You've already mentioned telemedicine with regard to broadband access. Many rural Georgians have no nearby level one trauma center medical facility, sometimes condemning them to a more likely death from violent accidents, strokes, heart attacks, and the like. Do you have a solution to expand access to such care for rural residents? And second part of the question is just to say that hospital care is not available nearby in many areas of rural Georgia, and smaller hospitals have been closing often throughout the state. Attracting primary care physicians is growing more and more difficult. So I'd like your thoughts on both of those issues with regard to rural health care.
Yeah, I think rural health care is a place in our state where we got to look at and shake our head and say there's got to be some way we could do better. And I'll talk about a couple of great examples and experiments to start under Governor Deal that I think are the types of things I would look to expand on. One of the maddening things that I have observed in this time I've been running for governor and kind of putting my ear to the ground and listening is throughout our state, you'll have constrained capacity and excess capacity sitting right next to one another. What do I mean by that? There was a hospital, I think it was in Mitchell County, that was in financial duress. And they decided they were going to be great at ventilation beds. And so they basically planted the flag, made that a core competency, and now they're bringing people in from all over the state there. So that creates a situation where instead of waiting for a ventilation bed somewhere else in the state, like in Atlanta, for example, you go there and you get great quality care. They now, instead of having any sort of financial difficulties like they experienced before, have a new source of revenue. And I think there is an opportunity like that to, you know, develop sort of core subspecialties and balance out capacity within our healthcare network across the state. I'll give you another example. It's not the same as Level 1 Trauma Center, but I'll give you an example of the types of intelligent 21st century things I think sit there for us to do. Ambulance companies. What I'm told by people that run some of these ambulance companies in rural Georgia, for example, is that on your typical shift, you're an ambulance driver, you might work 7 hours and sit around for five waiting for something to do. Well, that's unused capacity is sitting there that we could be taking advantage of. I'd argue that an ambulance feels a lot like a mobile ER on wheels. And there's about 1% of Georgians that drive about 21% of all the dollars that go to healthcare. 5% drive almost half. And it's a lot of things you talked about, type 2 diabetes, stroke, heart disease, things that if we diagnose early, things if we monitor off-site, remotely, we can have a real impact. Get folks into the treatment programs they need, get them the medicine they need. And I think tapping into some of this unused capacity, using mobile technology, using, you know, unused ambulance capacity, I think that's a way to, you know, prevent that person in rural Georgia from saying, I've got a stroke starting, how do I get to Atlanta or Savannah? The other thing that I would tell you on that is, you know, I mentioned we've got this, our farm is around Macon. There's an area southeast of Macon called the Stroke Belt. It's got some of the highest incident mortality rates of heart disease and stroke of anywhere in America. And, you know, this is something that, I mean, I've observed neighbors of ours in Juliet lose family members. And, you know, I'll ask them, what are you doing? Well, I'm on my way to drive to such and such, and it's an hour and a half drive to get the basic care they need, or see a family member, a loved one, who's in a hospital in Atlanta because they're getting a different type of care there than they get somewhere else. My mother-in-law lives in Carrollton. She has to drive into Atlanta and stay with us basically a night a week to get specific types of health care in Atlanta that she can't get in Carrollton, for example. And we got to work to resolve that.
All right, switching again. Regional T-SPLOST referendums are seen as one way that smaller rural areas can recover some of their sales tax dollars that flow into regional trade centers. It is questionable, however, if this approach can work because T-SPLOST have only been approved in three regions, although there are more on upcoming referendums. Do you see another way for small rural areas to regain more of their tax dollar outflow?
Yeah, one of the things, so first of all, sort of let me address some infrastructure investments, and then let's talk about philosophically how I think they ought to be funded, and then let's talk about things I think you might get from a Governor Tippins that would be a different funding model. You know, first of all, something I talk aggressively about, and when I'm out on the stump, I feel like I'm focusing on it more than any of the other opponents. Governor Deal's left us with an unbelievably healthy state balance sheet, AAA bond rating. We're in good shape financially at this moment in time. And the Savannah Port has got a 7-to-1 ROI. Every dollar that goes into Savannah Port pays back an estimated $7. And a lot of that payback would happen in parts of the state where there's not as many economic development opportunities, Southeast Georgia, along the I-16 corridor, for example. I think that we're running 2.5 years behind the original dredging schedule because the hoped for federal funds have not yet materialized. We're likely to get less money from the federal government going forward as opposed to more. because we're basically bankrupt as a nation if you look at our federal debt. So we're a state that's financially healthy enough to put more of our state dollars into it. I think the next governor needs to be looking at putting more Georgia money towards accelerating that port dredging schedule, and that's going to be a lift across the state. It's going to be a lift in your agriculture and your forestry segments. So those are that's an example for me of an investment. While I'm going to talk about investments that need to be made now, but two or three things I'd say on how you fund investments. I'm not for state sort of taxes where they get applied across the state and then one area of the state disproportionately benefits from those, and everybody else is saying, "Hey, that's our money. Why do you get to use more of it?" I mean, there's examples of places that egregiously need investment, but in general, there's got to be sort of a fairness test to this. The second thing I would tell you is I think we have a tremendous opportunity to shrink our government and improve it and harvest extra monies to be invested. My objective would be to find $2 to $3 billion of headspace, 10% or more, within the current spend and put that towards some things like infrastructure investments, education investments, and also income tax reductions. And I'll give you something that I haven't heard from the other folks running, and it's one of the things that cast me into this race. I was hungry for this sort of ideas. Let me give you two or three big things that the governor can do in the next 8 years, especially if the governor's got a business background. Number one, we've got 15,000 almost baby boomers. They'll be voluntarily retirement eligible in the next 3 years from the state of Georgia. The real number is 14,600. I did my homework. That's about one out of five of all the state employees. And we've never in the history of this state, really in the history of our country, had so many people retire all at one time. It is some of your most senior state employees that have determined how it works up till now. But with them leaving en masse, voluntarily, we're not talking about, pink slips. With them voluntarily leaving, it's a once-in-a-generation opportunity to shake up the government, transform the government, reprioritize the government, and shrink the government. I spent a career using technology to enable corporate functions. Some of those roles we can enable with technology. We can consolidate some of them. We can move some of them into a second or a third grade classroom, for example. And that's a real opportunity. That could be hundreds of millions of dollars a year. I went and I did a personal study because I couldn't find a good body of analysis on entitlement fraud in the state. And for example, there are 20 counties in Georgia. They've got three times the state average of their working age adults on disability. So we're not talking about folks that are, very elderly or have real disabilities that prevent them from working. We're talking about people that are able-bodied working age adults. And if you took the state average, there's 20 counties with three times the state average. If you plot the 20 counties on a map, 17 are contiguous. It's four nice, neat, clean clusters to sit around the state and pop off the page at you. You'd look at it in 10 seconds and say, that's not normal. So if we use analytics like you use in the military, you mentioned you're an intelligence specialist. We know how to do this overseas when you map out networks of bad guys. You know how in business, for example, there's not a bank in Georgia or United States of America that couldn't tell you right now which branches have got the highest or lowest loan default rates. If we brought that sort of analytical approach to government, I think that we could take a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse, hundreds of millions of dollars out of our entitlement system, and end up with a social safety net that people believed was more fair, that it's not something that's being taken advantage of at the levels that it is. And I think if you start looking at all the things like that, we could find $2 to $3 billion, and then we could give that money back not just as a tax reduction, but also as investment funds for things like infrastructure that then local communities should have choices over how they use those things. The last thing I would tell you that I have observed, I mentioned my mom lives in Chattooga County, and she was talking about how they're looking to raise the millage rate because they, because of drug issues, need more prison beds, and they're looking at a local tax increase. And one of the things that I think gets lost by leadership is your citizen thinks that he or she has three pockets, a federal pocket, a state pocket, and a local pocket. And if you're just bragging, saying, well, I cut taxes, I cut state taxes, well, if that's a cut in services that causes a mayor or county commissioner to raise millage rates, the consumer, the citizen, doesn't feel like they got a good deal. They're like, you took money out of my left pocket and you stuck it in my right. Don't tell me I got a good deal. And so I think that's another thing that Governor George has got to do is he's got to look at those three buckets as if he or she were a private citizen and figure out how to get the best possible impact to a community at a total tax reduction and not just a tax reduction on the pool of money that they control. That's not how real people see it.
All right. Final question. No matter what the state of Georgia proposes, the majority of South Georgia and other rural areas are going to be farther away than the, quote, magic hour away from the Atlanta airport that so many consider to be crucial in attracting development. What steps can you propose to help overcome this obstacle in logistics and transportation?
I think there's a few things. I mentioned before, I think that the Savannah port, putting more Georgia money into that and accelerating the dredging schedule for that, I don't think we have a more important investment in infrastructure to be made in the state, because that's going to be a tide that lifts all boats, especially boats across, you know, Southeast Georgia. I could go through other opportunities like that. A Columbus, for example, has got some of the leading development experimentation around robotics, because they got good at that because of the presence of the Army there when we were basically detonating bombs remotely over the last 10 years in Afghanistan and Iraq. Augusta could be the cybersecurity capital of America. And I can tell you, being a tech guy, and if you doubt me, pick up the newspaper and figure out whatever corporation got hacked today, because there's about one of them every day. There's not a more important growth area for our nation's security and also that create opportunities. If you've got any listeners out there that are under 18 years old, go figure out how to be in cybersecurity. You're going to make a ton of money and have job security as far as the eye can see, and you're solving a problem that's a really important problem. So I think Augusta, so where I'm going with this is we could have these nodes around the state where they're little mushroom ink blots of economic opportunity. The port, logistics, Savannah, ink blotting out. Augusta, cybersecurity, ink blotting out. You know, robotics and those sorts of things, ink blotting out around a Columbus. And I think that the next governor's got to think in terms of not just helping Atlanta, but, and it's not just about dollars being invested in those towns. Governor Deal's done a good job of investing those dollars. I think there's a bully pulpit element to that. So imagine there's a Governor Tippins. But, you know, when the next movie comes to Georgia to be made and they're shopping for a really cool town square, that's a movie, if that's made where there was an investment made in a local high school, where there's an investment made in the local hospital, then that punches above its weight, because now you got two or three good things happening roughly in the same time. If the governor is sitting there talking to the CEO of a company that's going to bring three distribution centers to Georgia, you know, the governor's job isn't to tell that businessman or businesswoman where to put them. But all things being equal, if he could jawbone it a little bit and get them to put a warehouse or a distribution center or a factory plant where there's other investments happening in healthcare and education. What we learned overseas, I mean, sadly, the best job in economic development we've done on the countryside is in Afghanistan and Iraq. We've put more focus and we got a better job at it there than anywhere else, because what we figured out under David Petraeus is there's five or six conditions that have to be true for a town to have a chance. You got to have decent education. You got to have decent healthcare. You got to have something like the GBI lean in and help the local police people clean out some of the gangs and that sort of thing. And you got to have an infusion of jobs. If there's six or seven things, four or five have got to happen of the six in a relatively short amount of time to hit escape velocity and hit critical mass. I think that's a different way of thinking of rural economic development. And it's one that, you know, it's one that I have observed that works and one that I would bring as Governor of Georgia.
We've touched on a lot of things, even beyond the topics, but I want to give you an opportunity to address any rural issues that are part of your platform that we haven't already discussed.
I mean, I think that we hit on a lot of them. There's a couple of others that I've heard about as I went around the state and talked to folks about. I think water is the oil of this century. We are blessed in our state that landowners control the water. I think that's unbelievably important. That continues. But I think that, you know, me coming into the governor's office, for example, with a technology background, when it comes to the intersection of agriculture and water, I think that Georgia could be an ag tech place that leads in that, where, I mean, we have great technology development partnerships between entrepreneurs, between our universities, between our farmers, because what's possible with mobile sensors and controls and things like that, as far as optimizing water usage, optimizing fertilizer usage, we're going to take huge steps forward in agriculture in that way. And instead of buying technology made somewhere else, I'd love for our state to make some of that technology, and it'd be something done in partnership between our farmers, our universities, our entrepreneurs. So that's another opportunity I think that exists for us. Some of the things I talk about I don't think are unique to rural Georgia. I've never run for office before. This is my first time running for anything. I came into this because I worry a lot that if you look at our national debt, that sometime in the next few years, the reckoning is going to come. It's very hard for me to imagine the next few years that we're going to have the same amount of money from the federal government given to us for infrastructure investments, for education. Tons and tons of our state budget comes from the federal government. We got to figure out how we can be more self-sufficient in case the debt starts pinching us. If you look at our society, it's changed. I mean, how we work, how we learn, how we live. Like, look what we're doing here. We're talking on a podcast that you just rigged up in 15 minutes before we started. That wasn't possible 15, 20 years ago. And everything about our world has moved forward in a dramatic way except for our government. Our government, how we do healthcare and education and roads, it doesn't look that much different than 1965. And I believe the 2020s will be a decade where government, the debt will make it get better and cheaper because we won't be able to afford what we do now. And all the advances in technology and medicine enable it to take a massive step forward. And I think Georgia's going to step into the 21st century. And as someone that doesn't have any, you know, I'm not beholden to special interest. I haven't been in office. I'm not looking at this saying, well, we can only do A or B, or I can only work with C. I'm coming in with whatever it takes, unconventional attitude, and I'm bringing a ton of executive management business experience. I ran a very successful large technology business. I'm coming in with, you know, a Navy SEAL mindset, and I think that's a very different level of urgency. We didn't talk about that. I mean, sex trafficking, human trafficking, MS-13, heroin, these are massive problems that our state faces, and you know, from doing JSOC sort of, you know, targeting of networks abroad, there's a lot we can do to map out and take down networks of bad people. And I think that I could bring a method and a skill set and a ruthlessness and a thoughtfulness to that that hasn't been tried before. And I think that we could have a massive impact on sex trafficking, our heroin gangs, and our MS-13 gangs. And I look forward to doing that as governor. I think that's what you get with the sealed piece that you wouldn't get otherwise.
And I want to give you an opportunity just to speak directly to our audience as to why they should vote for you for next governor of Georgia.
I hit some of those things. I've never run for office, so I'm coming in this not because this is a logical career progression for me. I'm in the time of my life with my wife and kids where I ought to be at soccer games. I'm in the type of my career where I should be focusing on putting aside a nest egg for retirement. And I came into this because I truly believe we're at an inflection point in our state. I think we're almost that moment that Joseph and Pharaoh were at in Genesis when they talked about 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. We are at a time of plenty right now, but I truly believe we have an opportunity and a need to do some things differently over the next few years to maintain our security and our prosperity. And I've got the background for that. And I'm not limited in my thinking. I'm not beholden to special interest. And I think that I don't think I'm the right guy to be governor of the state every time. I'm the right guy to be governor of the state right now because where we are, the challenges and opportunities, it uniquely fits my background. And I'm in this for that reason and that reason alone. That's it. I hope that enough Georgians see that and sense how serious I am about that and how convicted I am about that and that they support me on May 22nd.
Commander Clay Tippins, thanks for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
All right, take care.
Okay, I'm joined now by phone with Representative Stacey Evans, candidate for Georgia. Representative Evans, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So when you come into a small town, people want to kind of size you up. They sometimes ask you two questions that I'm going to ask you, and that is, where are you from and what do your folks do? So Representative Evans, where are you from and what do your folks do?
I love this question, and it's funny. When I was in the legislature for the last 7 years, people would always say, where are you from? And that means, like, what district are you from? But I would always hear that as, where am I from? And so I would always say, I'm from Ringgold, Georgia. And they would look at me and say, I thought so-and-so represented Ringgold. And I would say, oh, well, I live in Smyrna now, and I represent Smyrna and Marietta in the legislature, but I'm from Ringgold, Georgia, up in the northwest corner of the state.
All right. And what do your folks do? What's your background, your family?
Growing up, my family mostly worked in carpet mills. Mom, dad, aunts, uncles, grandparents, cousins, pretty much everybody, because carpet was king up in northwest Georgia when I was growing up. But since the mill jobs went away, in large part, my mom has been a cashier at a truck stop for many years, over 20 years. She now works at a gas station. My dad is a truck driver.
Okay, I want to ask you two questions now. They could be answered the same way, just a matter of perspective. And those questions are, why do you want to be the governor of Georgia? And why should people elect you to be the governor of Georgia?
I want to be governor to bring hope and opportunity to all Georgia families. Hope is a very important part of my personal story. As I mentioned, grew up in Ringgold, Georgia. I was the first person in my family to go to college, and I was able to do that because of the Hope Scholarship. And that program is not strong like it used to be, and I want to strengthen it again. I want to make sure that all students have access to the opportunity I had to better myself and go on to college. So I want to bring back hope in the form of Hope Scholarships and Hope Grants, but also hope that if you work hard, you're going to have access to a good job that pays you a fair living wage. Hope that if you want to start or grow a small business, you get supported in that dream, not just if you're well-connected and you live in Atlanta, but everybody's going to get a chance to live out their dream or grow their small business. Hope that if you are sick, you will be able to go to a doctor and you will have the assurance of insurance because we're going to expand Medicaid. Hope that no matter where you live, you'll be able to take your kids to school, know that they're getting an education that lives up to their promise, and hope that we will remain a state that is open for business and closed for hate. That's the hope that I want to bring to all families across the state. And people should vote for me because I say what I mean, and I mean what I say, and I do what I say I'm going to do. I spent 7 years in the legislature trying to piece back what was broken about the HOPE program, and I was able to make two very important expansions of the HOPE grant program, one to expand the number of students that qualified for the HOPE grant, and two to increase the amount of the grant for at least the performing students. And it was my inability to get all the way where I was trying to go with the expansion of HOPE, which is to restore tuition-free technical college. I kept getting it stopped in that process. I had reached the limits of what I could do in the minority party in the legislature and was going to need to find a platform for my work. So I'm in this for the work. I am in this to do good for the state of Georgia and to open up those doors of opportunity. And if I thought I could still do that in the legislature, I'd be right there in the legislature doing it. But I'm in this fight because I believe that it is the governor's chair where I need to be to make progress on these policies that I know will help families all across the state. So I'm a worker. Folks should know that about me and feel confident when they send me to the governor's office that I'll be working hard for them every day.
I've got some questions now specific to rural Georgia. I'll start with rural broadband. First question, there is much talk about expanding broadband internet access in rural Georgia. What is your proposal for easier and better access, and how do you propose to pay for it?
Well, it's not an option not to expand access to broadband in rural parts of the state. We can't expect children to be able to do their best in school and get access to the tools that they need to expand their minds and do the work that their teachers want to give them. We can't expect businesses to grow and new industry to pop up in areas where folks can't get the access to broadband that they need. So it is not a question of if, it is just when and how. And I think it needs to be as soon as possible, and it will be a top priority when I'm governor. Now, how do you do it? You get together with local communities, state leaders, and the private sector providers of the services, and you all work together to come to a solution. The state should not dictate to local communities how this is going to be implemented and how it will be maintained, because the state has a tendency sometimes to decide one thing and then leave the local government holding the bag on how to actually implement on the ground and then how to maintain the programs going forward. So I want everybody at the table at once. I want to make sure that local communities are getting choices and that we don't shove one particular provider down their throat and then quality suffers. We need competition. We need to make sure that everyone is on the same page going into this, and especially the local governments, because there's a lot of maintenance that goes into maintaining these systems, and they're going to be the ones there on the ground. So we want to make sure that they're involved from the beginning and they are on board and everybody's on the same page. Now, how do we pay for it? It's going to have to be a group effort. The state is going to have to make some investment in this. And the providers are going to have to make an investment too, because they stand to make profits over time. And so there's no reason they shouldn't be involved in the upfront investment as well. So I see this as a partnership between the state, the local communities, and the providers.
With the notion that internet access allows much work to now be done from anywhere, do you see opportunities to move more of the state's jobs further out, away from metro areas, into parts of rural Georgia? And if you have examples, feel free to share.
I've spent now at least I've living in the metro area in Cobb County. I've also lived in downtown Atlanta for 6 years, but I've also spent many years living in an area growing up, going to Houston. And I know that at the end of the day, and I think that we should be doing everything that we can to state jobs out across the state. Number one, it's worth the notion that we are one Georgia and it's still a part of the state government. It's also cheaper in many instances to run the overhead of state government outside of Atlanta. Land, rent, utilities are more expensive in town than in other parts of the state, and so we should do as much as we can from the state government's perspective to save overhead. Plus, it brings job opportunities to rural parts of our state. So we should absolutely be looking to relocate some government funds outside of the Atlanta area where possible. Now, specifically when it comes to constituents, community affairs, where folks are looking to figure out what state resources are available for them, we should have these offices all over the state. I also believe that we should bring back the small business liaisons that use small regions all across the state to work with small businesses to help them grow, to identify new markets where it might be ripe for a new industry to pop up, and work with those who are interested in starting a small business on how they would do that with regard to getting going, getting access to capital, and things of that nature. Those small business liaisons were cut out of the Economic Development Department's budget during, and we can afford to bring those back now. And that also helps to put functions of state government out and about all across the state so that we're including everyone. These roles in particular can help start and grow small businesses all across the state, which is necessary to keep all parts of the state strong and to grow these areas into what we all want them to be.
And switching now to healthcare, hospital care is not available nearby in many areas of rural Georgia, and smaller hospitals have been closing throughout our state. Attracting primary care physicians is growing more and more difficult. In addition, many rural Georgians have no nearby level one trauma center medical facility, sometimes condemning them to a more likely death from violent accidents, strokes, heart attacks, and the like. Do you have a solution to expand access to such care for rural residents? And again, how would it be paid for?
Well, and I think what we have to do is cover more Georgians with the assurance of insurance, because it is when folks are going in for health care, not able to pay those bills, that leads to hospitals closing shop and health care facilities closing up around the state. So we've had 800 closed since the state decided not to expand Medicaid. Expanding Medicaid gives more Georgians insurance, puts more paying customers into the doors of these hospitals. I think the first step in any plan to shore up our healthcare network systems across the state, particularly in rural Georgia, is to expand Medicaid, which would immediately cover 500,000 students with health insurance. Now, this will require some upfront investment to expand to at least covered by federal government. And for every dollar we invest as Georgians in Medicaid expansion, we bring $8 or $9 back to the economy. So I don't see this as an expense. I see it as an investment, and it's an investment that grows jobs. At least 50,000 jobs will be created as a result of expanding Medicaid and getting more folks out there getting access to health care. So it's a way to grow jobs. It's an investment over time. Plus, it gives folks, in the meantime, access to health care that they so desperately need. No business in their right mind would locate to an area where their workers cannot get access to the health care that they need within a reasonable amount of time. I think it's unconscionable that there are parts of the state where you can have a car wreck and be at risk of dying in a situation that if the wreck had happened in Atlanta or an area where you were close to a hospital, that same accident wouldn't result in the death. I think it's absolutely unacceptable that the same wreck in two different parts of the state could lead to someone dying or could lead to simply go in and get bandaged up and leave. That should not be happening in our state. And I will definitely be working immediately to expand Medicaid. And then we've got to go a step further, and we've got to cover more, even more Georgians with the assurance of insurance. And one way we can do that is by ending the practice in the state of employee misclassification, where you have companies that are calling their workers independent contractors when really they're employees. And if they were employees, they'd be able to buy benefit packages, including access to health care. The third thing that we have to do is fraud, waste, and abuse in the system. I spent 4 years of my private law practice a Medicare whistleblower fraud case. I represented a brave doctor and a nurse who came forward with allegations of fraud, waste, and abuse in a national dialysis chain. The government didn't want to intervene in the case, so my firm put that forward as the counsel for these brave men, and we recovered over $300 million for taxpayers. I will bring that same fight to rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse in our state system so that we are keeping costs down for everybody. But that is ultimately what this is about, keeping costs down so that everybody has access to the health care that they need all across the state.
Switching gears, regional T-SPLOS referendums are seen as one way that smaller rural areas can recover some of their sales tax dollars that flow into regional trade centers. It is questionable, however, if this approach can work because T-SPLOS have only been approved in a few areas, although more are coming up for a referendum. Do you see another way for small rural areas to regain more of their tax dollar outflow?
Well, I think we've got to stop looking at transportation improvement as something that's just for the area. Our transportation project should be spread all across the state to begin with. It's not a situation where certain regions get back their fair share because when they send everything to Atlanta, to come back. That is not the way I want our transportation projects to work when I'm governor. I think that we need a coordinated regional mass transit system in Metro Atlanta, but I also believe that we need to build out commuter rail lines all across the state to connect the smaller cities to each other and also the smaller cities to Atlanta. I think amazing things happen when we do this. Number one, we put a lot of people to work building. Number two, in the medium term, we put more Georgians within a reasonable daily commute path of a good job, even if there aren't extensive job opportunities in their particular region. For example, if you were in the southwest corner of the state and you were having a hard time finding job opportunities there, you'd be able to get on a commuter and get over to jobs at the Port of Savannah or to Macon or to Columbus within a reasonable daily commute path. And then in the very long term, you've built access to transportation, access to the rest of the state for industry that might consider places all throughout the state to locate new plants, new facilities, and you've just given more options for businesses to expand all across the state of Georgia. Now, I think that Georgia has come late to the game on transit. We've got a lot of catch-up to do, but while we're talking about expanded transit options, we also can't ignore the fact that we need to improve and invest in roads and bridges across the state as well. Growing up in Ringgold, I always was on the interstate. We are an exit on 75, in fact, the last one before you cross into Tennessee. And I didn't realize growing up what an advantage that was to be in a small town, yes, but being 20 minutes from I-75 put us within a very quick drive to Chattanooga, hour and a half drive to Atlanta, for example. So we were connected into opportunities so that when plants, particularly the carpet mills in Georgia, in Northwest Georgia, started to close or those opportunities started to shrink, folks were able to get access to job opportunities in Chattanooga and they could continue down I-75 to any number of towns to work in Dalton and other locations. That's not an option when job opportunities go away in parts of South Georgia, for example, for folks that are not close to an interstate. And we've got to make sure that everybody is able to get where they are trying to go, literally and figuratively.
Final question. No matter what the state of Georgia proposes, the majority of rural areas of state are going to be farther away from that, quote, magic hour away from the Atlanta airport that so many to be crucial to attracting development. What steps can you propose to help overcome this obstacle in transportation and logistics?
Well, I think first is expanding access to transit, putting the commuter rail lines across the state so that folks can hop on a train and get to Atlanta, get to the airport faster. And I think that you could be able to get closer to that magic hour. But I don't think that we should put it out of the question to look at considering other airport options, particularly in middle Georgia. If we can make that capability, we should work toward that as a long-term goal.
And finally, I just want to give you the opportunity to address any issues that may be part of your platform that address rural Georgia specifically.
Certainly. Well, I got into this race to expand HOPE, particularly the HOPE grant scholarship program. That was such a big part of my ability to build the life that I have. Growing up in Ringgold, born to a teenage mom who didn't finish high school, and we struggled a lot. And without that, I never would have been able to go to college. And I was the first in my family to go. And that HOPE scholarship made it possible. Then I went to the University of Georgia. I stayed there for law school, met my husband, Andrew. We now have a daughter, Ashley, who's six and, of course, is in my life. And I was able to become an attorney. I was able to run for the legislature. All these things happened before I had access to that Hope Scholarship. Now, when I got in 2011, the scholarship program was cut drastically. And it was devastating for me to personally have to watch my lifeline get ripped apart right in front of my face. But I was there to fight back. And the cuts to the Hope Scholarship program were devastating for people all across the state, but particularly for those who are living in rural parts of our state. And one of the main reasons is that a 1,200 SAT score was added as part of the criteria for full tuition Hope Scholarship. 1,200 is a really high score. I didn't have it growing up, and I don't think that meant I was smart or worthy of my state's investment. I think it meant that I didn't have the background or exposure to certain experiences that would allow me to score well on that test. I think it meant my parents couldn't afford test preparation like a lot of kids in upper income families could. And there were a large number of counties where not a single student had 1,200 on the SAT. And a lot of those counties were in rural parts of the state. Now, it was so bad that the Senate added a caveat that at least the top performing student, the valedictorian and salutatorian of every Georgia high school, would be able to have the full tuition Hope Scholarship regardless of their SAT score. That was so that every county would have at least two full tuition Hope Scholars. And I think we can do better than that. In addition to there being such a large number of counties where not a single student had a 1,200 on the SAT, 97% of African-American students lost access to a full tuition Hope Scholarship after the criteria was changed. This was devastating to Georgians. The Hope Grant, the cuts to that program, which were that for the first time ever, a GPA requirement was added. It used to be that no matter your grades, if you wanted to go to technical college in Georgia, you could do so tuition-free, but that changed in 2011. You had to now have a 3.0, and the grant would no longer cover full tuition. The next year, 40,000 students left technical college. That was nearly a quarter of the student body population. And you know as well as I do that technical colleges are economic engines in rural parts of the state. And so when enrollment goes down at our technical colleges, rural communities suffer. Now, I was able to get rid of the GPA requirement on the Hope Grant through legislation that I sponsored, and I was able to create a sub-grant so that at least top-performing students in technical college, those that have a 3.5, are able to get full tuition. But I want to restore tuition-free technical college in the state. It will help all of Georgia, but in particular, will help rural communities where they need their technical colleges to be strong. And we have the money to do this. It would cost about $20 million. Every year since 2011, there's been $60 million new coming into the lottery that we have not been spending. So we could do this three times if we wanted to, but we certainly can afford to do it once. And it is something that will help all of Georgia, as I said, but particularly our rural communities. And we have a skills gap. We know that there are Georgians that are unemployed, and we know that there are jobs that sit unfilled. And unfortunately, right now, a lot of the skills that are needed for the jobs that are sitting unfilled are not had by those who are unemployed. And technical colleges can fix that, but we've got to get more Georgians in the seats on those campuses to get access to the skills and the training that they need. And that is a top priority for me and one that I believe we will be able to pass in the first term.
And I want to invite you now just to speak directly to our audience as to why they should vote for you for Georgia's next governor.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Thanks for the opportunity to share some information about myself. I am from Georgia, born and raised here, never lived anywhere else. I'm a proud double dog, and I am someone who has a uniquely Georgian success story, because if not for the Hope Scholarship Program, which of course was created right here in Georgia, I never would have been able to go to college. And that opportunity meant everything to me, and I know what access to opportunity can mean for Georgia families, and I will be going into that office every day thinking about how do we make sure that the doors of opportunity stay open for more Georgians. And I want to work to bring hope and opportunity to all Georgia families. Hope that you'll be able to go to college if you wish to do so, that financial aid will never be a barrier to you being able to go. Hope that you'll be able to get access to a job that pays a fair wage. Hope that you'll be able to grow some small businesses if that is your desire. Hope that your kids will be able to go to a good school. Hope that we'll all be able to access healthcare when we need it, and hope that we will remain a state open for business and closed for hate. And I hope everyone will go out and vote on May 22nd. And please remember Stacey Evans.
All right, Representative Stacey Evans, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Thank you so much.
Well, there they are, small towners. You've now been introduced to the candidates for governor and lieutenant governor of Georgia. I hope these interviews helped you to get to know them just a little bit better as you decide how to cast your vote. Like I've said on previous episodes, I strongly encourage you to take the time to educate yourself on the candidates that you can vote for and the issues that you can vote on in this year's election. Not just the statewide positions, but your local government officials and decisions as well. The primaries for these candidates is May 22nd, with early voting beginning on April 30th. Please exercise your right to vote and encourage others to do the same. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.